smile, darn you smile. You know this old world is a good world after all. Smile, darn you smile. And right away watch Lady Luck pay you a call. Things are never black as they are painted. It's time for you and happiness to get reacquainted. Make life worthwhile. Come on and smile, darn you smile. Take it here.
Live from the Waldron Art Center Auditorium, high atop beautiful downtown Bloomington, Indiana, our favorite place to live in the whole United States, WFHB's Holiday Special is on the air. And what a great show we've got for you tonight. Music from Mike Lucas and the B-Town Bearcats. Holiday fun from the mighty Firehouse Art Players. Special performances by Jim Krause and Ann Hurley, Art Heckman, the Batted Calf String Band, and stay tuned for the 70th anniversary performance of a radio classic, Norman Corwin's The Plot to Overthrow Christmas. And let's get things rolling now with a little Dixieland overture from Mike Lucas and the Bearcats. Take it away, Mike. And now, here's your host for the evening, usually heard every Sunday on WFHB's Firehouse Theater, Richard Fish.
There will now be a short pause while everyone says, "Who cares?" Now, cut that out, Jack. That is exactly the way Jack Benny introduced himself the very first time he appeared on the radio, way back in 1930. Of course, that was a long time ago now, and things were a lot different back then. The stock market had crashed, the financial system was collapsing, veterans were homeless, the president was a Republican who wasn't doing anything effective, and people were performing live on the radio. Things are totally different today. And just to show you how different things were back then, here is Art Heckman with a song that was a big hit on the radio in 1930.
They used to tell me I was building a dream, and so I followed the mob. When there was earth to plow or guns to bear, I was always there, right there on the job. They used to tell me I was building a dream with peace and glory ahead. Why should I be standing in line just waiting for bread? Once I built the railroad, made it run, made it race against time. Once I built a railroad, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime? Once I built a tower to the sun, brick and rivet and rhyme. Once I built a tower, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime? Once in khaki suits, gee, we looked swell, full of that Yankee doodly-dum. Half a million boots went slogging through hell, and I was the kid with the drum. Say, don't you remember, they called me Al. It was Al all the time. Why don't you remember, I'm your pal. Buddy, can you spare a dime?
Well, folks, a dime ain't what it used to be. Today, you have to ask for $1.49 to buy what a dime would get you back then.
Used to tell me I was building a dream, and so I signed on the line. I made my payments, but I didn't know they were borrowing more all the time. They used to tell me I had equity now, a real safe harbor at last. Why should I be living in my car, trying to pay for gas? Once I built an airline, made it fly, my flights departed on time. Once I built an airline, now it's out of the sky. Buddy got $1.49. Once I had investments, a 401k. I watched the indexes climb. Once I had retirement, but not today. Buddy got $1.49. Once in chocolate chips, gee, we looked hot, showing them all that Yankee shock and awe. Half a world away, we gave our best shot, until it was time to withdraw. Say, don't you remember, they called me Bill. It was Bill all the time. Remember, we were buddies, now are we still? Buddy got $1.49.
the B-Town Bearcats. Oh, thank you so much. So here we are, smack dab in the middle of the 2008 holiday season, December 21st. And despite all the troubles we've got at home and overseas, we've got a lot of reasons to celebrate. Of course, Christmas is coming up in just 4 days, and Kwanzaa starts the day after that. But right now, tonight, well, just listen.
Tonight is the winter solstice, the first official day of winter, when our part of the planet is tilted farthest from the sun in its yearly orbit. Starting tomorrow, the nights get shorter and the days get longer.
And not a moment too soon, either. But that's not all.
Tonight is the first night of Hanukkah, the festival of lights, which celebrates a moment when a lamp with only 1 day's worth of oil miraculously burned for 8 full days, 2,173 years ago. Today, Hanukkah is a time of joy, especially for children who play with a traditional spinning top called a dreidel.
Well, dreidels may not be quite as popular this year. After the election and the financial crisis, everybody's had it up to here with spin. And besides that...
Today is Forefathers Day.
I only had one myself, but what they're doing with genetics these days is amazing.
No, it's the day the Pilgrims landed on Plymouth Rock in 1620.
Well, buckle my shoe. A national holiday celebrating undocumented immigrants. But wait, there's more.
Today also happens to be National Haiku Poetry Day.
And a haiku is?
A haiku is a short poem, usually limited to 17 syllables, that uses imagistic language to convey the essence of an experience of nature or the season intuitively linked to the human condition.
Sounds like the YouTube version of a Frank Capra movie. But we've got cultural influences and people from all over the world right here. Haiku has become very popular in Bloomington, where all the women are living in southern Indiana, and all the men are too. Why, if you just go over the river and through the woods to the old general store, you'll find the folks a-setting around the potbelly stove, talking and chewing and swapping haiku, just like in the old Currier and Ives prints.
Hand me that log, John. Thank you. There. That ought to hold us a bit. That reminds me of a haiku. Fragile little moth, seeking warmth in candle's flame. God darn idiot.
That's pretty good, Bill, but that ain't the way I heard it. The way I heard it, missing a kick at the refrigerator door, it closed anyway.
Oh, John. You know perfectly well Jack Kerouac wrote that one. You left your copy on the road in the hot house this morning. Refrigerator door. I don't know how we're going to pay the electric bill this month. And my retirement account is now a punct .0004-01K. Financial vultures. First gobble up our assets, then demand dessert.
You said it, Jenny. And you know, that new Japanese computer I got has started giving me haiku. Oops, hit the stove. Last night, the screen went all blue and said, three things are certain. Death, taxes, and lost data. Guess which has occurred.
Yeah. Oh, Alfred, I keep telling you, you should have got a Mac. Yesterday it worked. Today it's not working. Windows is like that.
Oh, look over there in the corner, everybody. Cat, 5 times too large, lying there loudly purring in a manger scene.
That's the furthest place in the room from the spittoon. Reminds me of what happened this afternoon. Slop in the hog trough. There's glitter in the dark muck. Is that my cell phone?
So you finally found it, Len. Don't be sending to me any more of them dirty text messages. Anyhow, we're all a bunch of hams, and you know what goes with ham. It's my high, slow one. 32 slices, wrapped individually, American cheese.
Oh, just to let you know, folks, we're not promoting tobacco here. Last year, they all decided to switch to licorice before the Surgeon General puts warnings on that.
And I've got a haiku for you. Holiday show on. Radio going nowhere. Better blame music.
Hi!
Hello. How you doing? So, here's some folks we found hunkered down behind the stove who've come out to warm us up. The Fatted Calf String Band.
For the Fatty Cat String Band. It's nice to be here hunkered down by the old wood stove. You out there in Radio Land don't know exactly how good Alex looks curled up here on the bearskin rug, but it's pretty nice. That leads me to introduce the band here. This Alex Mann here on the bass tonight. Got Mr. Joel Lynch playing the fiddle that he just finished making last week. Chris Mattingly over here playing banjo on another locally made instrument. My name's Brad. I'm playing the guitar tonight. We're going to sing some songs for you. And as it turns out, here's one right here. We've just been instructed to stoke the fire a little more and play some more music. So I guess that's what we're going to do.
Shortening bread?
Yeah, here's one for the children's. Thanks everybody for having us here. It's nice and warm and cozy around these parts. I guess we're gonna take you out with one short little number here. A little. I don't really know what we're gonna do, to be honest. How about you do that cluck old hymn?
Cluck old hymn.
Here's a good one.
Around a barn, one more drink won't do me no harm. The Fatted Calf String Band, everybody. Oh, thanks, fellas. Oh, that's marvelous. You know, the lovely and talented Arbutus Cunningham is usually on hand for our shows. She's a wonderful storyteller, a kind of a combination of Mark Twain and Leona Helmsley. Well, Arbutus couldn't be with us tonight, but just by chance, I have a story, a true story, actually a story about a story, and it's all true, that I'd like to tell you. See, recently, I returned from New Jersey. That's the only thing to do if you ever find yourself out there. You see, I was born and grew up in Jersey. And it is Jersey, not New Jersey, unless you're being all formal and everything, you know. After I come out here, though, and found out what a great place Bloomington is and how much I liked it, I stayed on and kind of became a little bit more like a Hoosier over the years, if you catch my meaning, if you get my drift. Bloomington has great shows and restaurants and, well, you know, just about everything the New York area has, except, like, traffic jams and air pollution and rolling blackouts and ridiculous prices. I went back there, though, because my high school class was having a reunion. I'm not going to tell you what year it was, what number it was, but when I told some people around here that I was going, I did have a little trouble explaining how I could graduate high school a year before I was born. But I had a great time, and I saw some people I hadn't seen since the Johnson administration. That's Lyndon, not Andrew, by the way. And, you know, along the way, our class has lost some people. A few of us had passed away. We had a little memorial service for them, which was really wonderful. We didn't have a big religious thing or sing sad songs. We got up and we told stories about them. And that worked wonderfully well because we arrived feeling sad they were gone and left feeling glad they'd been with us. And one of the people who had died was a guy I really, really would have liked to have seen again. His name was Bill Gebauer. Everybody called him Scuff or Scuffer. Scuff Gebauer, a great big guy, tall guy with a crew cut, light hair. I sort of knew this guy, but not all that well, you see, until it came time for our senior prom. And so this is the story that I told my classmates, a little story about me and the Scuffer. The prom. Oh, it was a big deal. Now, it wasn't quite like Enchantment Under the Sea from Back to the Future, but they did spend a lot of time decorating the cafeteria. And you know, when we went back to that cafeteria, it still smelled exactly the same. Anyway, for me, the problem with the prom was I had no date. When I saw the Harry Potter movie where he had to find a date for the big dance at Hogwarts, I could really empathize, you know. But in my case, a couple of weeks beforehand, Scuff Gebauer came up to me. He said, "Richard, I got a date for the prom. She's really hot. But she won't go out with me unless I get a date for her friend. You don't mind a blind date, do you?" A blind date? I'm a kid of taste. I mean, really. Okay, Scuff. Okay, I'll do it, sure. I'm playing it big, you know. There's something going on here that you don't know. Scuff had a van. Now, you know, back then, minivans were unknown. This was a full-sized van with no windows in the back and no seats either. Just the two seats up front and a mattress. Oh, boy. Now, this was long before any high school kid ever thought of hiring a limo, for goodness sake. If you were lucky, your parents would let you borrow the station wagon. If you weren't lucky, they'd drive you. So Scuff Gebauer had solved my date problem and my wheels problem with the ultimate date mobile. So comes prom night. And I put on my rented tuxedo. I got the electric blue jacket, you know. And Scuff picks us up. The girls rode in the back, lying on the mattress. We told them that would keep their dresses from wrinkling. Besides, I'd already called Shotgun. I don't really remember too much about the dance itself. But we were all being very adult. You know, doing that grown-up thing where you pretend that the official function is the actual reason you're here, when everybody knows the real action's gonna happen later on. So the dance finally ends. We get back into the Scuffermobile. This time, Scuff's date rode in front, and I reclined with mine on the mattress. But not restfully. Have you ever ridden in the back of a big old steel-framed Chevy van over New Jersey roads maintained by New Jersey politicians while some high school kid is trying to get to a place off the road as fast as he can? Oh, I'm trying to be nice to this girl, you know. I've totally forgotten her name, thank God. And I'm telling her about all the big stuff, you know, my folk rock music. Playing Petruchio and the Taming of the Shrew. All the time we're going up and down like one of those machines that shakes out the gravel in a driving, in a diamond mine, you know. And Scuff, wily old campaigner that he was, had provided us with liquid refreshments. Now, you see, back then, the drinking age in New Jersey was 21. But right over the border in New York State, it was 18. Scuff was 18, and he had gotten one of the classic high school libations of the day. A bottle of commercial daiquiri mix and a bottle of bourbon. You pour out half the drink mix, fill the bottle back up with bourbon, and shake. Viola, as they say in France. Now, right here, I gotta say something. If there are any kids listening to this, especially high school and college students, don't ever do this. It's a really, really bad idea. Take it my word for it, honest. But actually, Scuffer was a little more sophisticated than that. He got a bottle of wine for the girls. The good stuff. Mogan David 2020. So we park, and we get in the back. And things are starting to get better and better, you know. Gee, it's kind of hot in here. I think I'll take off my jacket. Oh, yeah, good idea. I think I'll take off my shirt, too. I don't want to spill anything on it. How about you girls? You want to take off those sweaters? Well, no, but I could take off my shoes. Oh, yeah. Things were definitely getting interesting. And the night was full of promise. Right up until my date threw up all over his date. That was when things kind of started going downhill. There was nothing for it, but we had to take the girls home. And the only conversation after that was about how you clean a really thick, fuzzy cashmere sweater that used to be pink. So we take them home, and after that, I'm riding shotgun again. And somehow, Scuffer and I felt obligated to finish off our liquid refreshments. I mean, here we are. We're two guys. We're on the loose. We got wheels, a rumpled tuxedo, and a bottle. How grown up can you get? Neither one of us was willing to let on to the other that the stuff in that bottle tasted really, really awful. So we're just driving around and drinking. Now, this, too, is a really, really, really bad idea. Don't do this. But we did. So about 2 in the morning, we're still driving. Scuff is doing about 15 miles an hour. We're on this gravel road. We have no idea where we are. But finally, it comes out to a paved road that we recognize. And Scuff stops the van with the engine running. And we're just sitting there. Oh, look. There's a car coming. Uh-huh. He's pulling over. Yeah. It's a cop. Oh. We are so out of it, it's all happening in slow motion. The cop gets out of his car and walks up to the driver's side of the van. We sit there. He shines a flashlight inside. We sit there. He finally had a knock on the window, and Scuff kind of shakes his head and straightens up and realizes he needs to crank down the window. And this fog of alcohol rolls right out into the cop's face. All right, let me see your driver's license and registration. It was at this moment that Scuff Gebauer earned an Oscar and a Tony and the Nobel Prize for acting. He pulled himself together somehow, and out of somewhere, he pulled out the most wonderful story you'd ever heard. He told the cop he had just joined the Marines and was due to leave for Vietnam in 3 days, and tonight was our senior prom, and we were just having a send-off, and would you believe it? The cop bought it. I mean, times have changed, and this could never happen today. Kids don't even imagine that it could. But it really did happen back then. The cop got a funny look on his face, and he pointed at me. You. Yeah, sir? Where do you live? I told him. It was about a mile or two away. You. He points at Scuff. You know where his house is?
Oh, yeah, sure, no problem.
All right. You drive there, and I'm going to follow you. Drive slow. You park this van in his driveway, and I don't want to see it move until at least noon. You got me? I'll be driving by every hour or two to check on you. And that's what happened. Scuff passed out in the back of the van. I went inside and passed out in my own bed. It was the most amazing improv performance I've ever seen in my life. So, at the reunion, I'm telling this story to my old classmates, or my middle-aged classmates, that is. And all of a sudden, after all these years, the truth finally hits me. I was the one they were being nice to. I was the blind date.
Well, now that we're all back home safe again in Indiana, it's time to refresh our ears, and we've got just the folks who can do it. Two very talented people who pluck some very lovely music, original music, out of their instruments. Please welcome Jim Krause and Ann Hurley.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here. This tune is called Angels, and we'll play it for you now. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That was 90% original, but then it was sort of repurposed for a little holiday we have coming up around the corner, thus named Angels. This next one, I'm just talking here because I'm filling time while I retune because I was in a different tuning. This next tune, it's kind of the same deal. This one is actually based on a tune that Krista Detour wrote, that she wrote based on one of my tunes, which I might play for you next. But this one, we're calling it Arctic Night. And I'll play it for you as soon as I get my E up to where it needs to be. Thanks for being here. Thank you very much. Okay, we're going to play a little waltz here. It's we'll call it Ackle Island, and I guess we'll call it a Kwanzaa on Ackle Island. That's what we'll call it now.
Oh, yes. Ann Hurley on the cello, Jim Krause on the guitar. Oh, thank you. That was lovely. And like Jim and Ann, Bill Weaver is one of the many talented folks you are liable to run into in this town. And Bill has a little Christmas story that's unlike any you've ever heard. So here he is, B-Town's own Bill Weaver.
Thank you. It was the night before Christmas, and this season, Santa Claus had gone supersonic. The modern world has left him little time to dawdle. Forget the cookies and milk. Vitamins and an energy bar is what the old boy needs. Visiting all the world's children would have been flat impossible, except for Santa's many little helpers. Like Babe Martin and his cousin Jean-Claude Van Damme, who found little Rudolph in a sack on the bank of Peppercorn Creek below the old footbridge. Apparently, the piece of human garbage who had tossed them there had missed the water and had been too lazy or too scared to go down and finish the job. Babe already had too many cats to count, so he figured one more wouldn't be a problem, especially this pretty little orange guy who had more sense than to eat any of the pickle loaf Babe offered him from his sandwich, but hungrily lapped up the half and half they'd brought along for their coffee. "We'll just have to drink it black, Jean-Claude," Babe allowed. "I just wish we catch the persons that did this," Van Damme scowled, suddenly crouching low, his hands whistling through the air in quick, sharp punches. "Hey, what's this?" Babe leaned back, startled. The kitten was purring, and his nose was blinking on and off, a bright red. "I'll be ding-busted," Babe exclaimed. "Perhaps I should take him back to Hollywood with me." "No way, I saw him first," Babe replied, turning the kitten around. He pulled up its tail for a closer look. "I thought somebody might have stuck a battery up there or something." "Ah," Jean-Claude smiled, "at least he'll be easy to name." And so he was, Rudolph, the red-nosed house cat. Rudolph the red-nosed house cat had a very shiny nose, and if you ever saw it, you would even say it glows. All of the other house cats used to yowl and call him names. They never let poor Rudolph join in any catnip games. Then one foggy Christmas Eve, Santa was lost. He had to face it. The new satellite directional system had crashed. All he got was a fatal error message while the sound system played, "Do you know the way to San Jose?" over and over and over again. That's when he saw the mighty peak of Mount Vigneron, parting the mist, and used it to guide himself to Babe Martin's cabin in the woods, where he stopped every year for a quick snort of holiday cheer. Babe was helpful. He had maps of just about everywhere in the world. The only problem was, said Santa, that it was dark in his cockpit. The power had gone down with the computer. "Cockpit," Babe replied. "What happened to the reindeer and sleigh?" "Too slow," Santa took him outside. "Looks like one of them space shuckles." Well, elves can make just about anything when they put their minds to it." "Then how come you said you were out of those Legos I asked for that one year?" "You were a very bad boy." "Oh, yeah," Babe paused thoughtfully. "I guess I was." Out of the corner of his eye, Santa noticed a blinking red light. It was Rudolph, of course, now grown up to cat size, doing a little hunting, which was difficult and frustrating for a cat with a 100-watt light for a nose. Babe quickly fetched him, holding him on his lap as he told the jolly old man about the rescue. Rudolph's nose brightened and dimmed gently as he purred. Santa exclaimed, "Rudolph, with your nose so bright, won't you be my map light tonight?" Santa promised to bring him back, but he never did. Nearly a year later, Babe was watching the evening news when he saw a scene of chaos at a local mall. Hundreds of parents were fighting each other to buy the season's gift sensation. Tickle Me Elmo was out. Forget the Pokeballs. They sat on the shelves untouched like dried corn husks. The hot item everybody wanted and no one could find was a lifelike cute little kitty cat with a red nose that blinked on and off. He was called Rudolph, the red-nosed house cat. And I hope I don't need to tell you where they put the batteries. Thank you.
Rudolph.
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 Check. Check.
Check. Check.
Rudolph.
Rudolph.
Shh.
Rudolph.
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 Sha na 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 na.
Rudolph.
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 Sha na 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 na. Rudolph the red-nosed reindeer had a very shiny nose, and if you ever saw him, you would even say it glows.
Rudolph,
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 sha-na-na-na-na-na.
Rudolph,
Rudolph,
sha-na-na-na-na-na.
That other reindeer
loved him
and shouted out with glee.
Rudolph the red-nosed reindeer, you'll run history.
Rudolph,
Rudolph,
sha-na-na-na-na-na.
Rudolph,
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 sha-na-na-na-na-na.
Then
one
foggy
Christmas
Eve,
Santa
came to stay.
Rudolph,
Rudolph,
sha-na-na-na-na-na.
Rudolph,
Rudolph,
sha-na-na-na-na-na.
Then all the reindeer loved him
as they shouted out with glee.
Rudolph the red-nosed reindeer, you'll go down in history.
Rudolph,
Rudolph,
sha-na-na-na-na-na.
Rudolph,
Rudolph, sha-na-na-na-na-na.
Rudolph,
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 Rudolph.
Oh my goodness.
Art Heckman, Kathy Norton, Kathleen Miller, and Dan Salvaggi, everybody. Gives a whole new meaning to the phrase, dear friends, doesn't it? But now it's time to remind you that you're listening to WFHB, Indiana's first community radio station, broadcasting on 91.3, 98.1, 100.7, and 106.3 FM, and streaming worldwide from our website at WFHB.org. We're coming to you live from the auditorium at the Waldron Art Center in Bloomington, Indiana, a town that nature forgot to hate.
It's WFHB's 2008 Holiday Special. I'm Richard Fish, here with our announcer, Jeff Stone. And Jeff, 2008 has been quite a year, and it's not over yet. Did you see where somebody in Iraq threw shoes at President Bush?
Yeah, sort of a love letter in the sandal, you might say.
You might. Well, here in America, we wouldn't think of throwing shoes at the president. We just want to give him the boot.
Well, that's what you get when you hang around with a bunch of sneakers.
Oh, yo-ho, enough of this pedestrian persiflage. Moving right along now.
Now it's time for WFHB's hard-hitting, award-winning news team to go out and have a couple at the Irish Lion, so we can bring you our Hoosier news team with their own slant on the upright and the lowdown. A unique look at the big stories scratching at the window pane right now. Hoosier news? We don't know. But here it is anyway.
Hoosier News Team, I'm Red Robin.
And I'm Bob Bobbin, and we better be getting along. President-elect Barack Obama has announced a new plan to stimulate the economy and bolster education at the same time. He will ask Congress for $6 billion to convert every taxi cab in America into a cash cab. Obama says the effort will funnel billions of dollars to average people, create 36 behind-the-scenes jobs for every taxi driver, and encourage everyone to pull their heads out of their behinds and try to at least learn something.
Senate Republicans say they oppose the Detroit bailout because they want to jumpstart the economy by bringing jobs from overseas. They let Alaska Governor Sarah Palin announce their plan to encourage businesses in other countries to outsource jobs to the United States by making sure that American workers do not make more money than foreign workers, said Palin.
By reducing workers' paychecks, business owners will get a really big economic stimulus from the savings, you know. And so then they'll be able to pay the banks. And then the bankers will have, like, you know, the confidence to start buying luxury goods and exotic vacations. And that'll just restart the old economy from the top down, you betcha. It's really just supply-side economics, you know. You supply us and then go stand on the side.
And Governor Palin also made local news red after former Monroe County Auditor Sandy Newman issued a statement last week saying she's sick and tired of Indiana politics, so she is going to move to Illinois and run for governor.
That's right, Bob. Governor Palin immediately announced support for Newman's candidacy and sent her a starter package consisting of 6 designer dresses, 5 sable stoles, 4 pairs of shoes, 3 French hats, 2 cashmere coats, and a turkey in a pear tree.
And in a related story, Hoosier News has learned that if he's convicted of federal crimes, Illinois Governor however you pronounce it, he doesn't expect to stay in prison very long. He's going to have his wife smuggle a BlackBerry to him so one of his aides can send him an email with a file in it. And now here's our entertainment reporter, Wendy Runway. Wendy?
Thanks, Bob. Fox and MSNBC have announced they will work together on a new program. American Inmate will combine an exciting reality of lockup and MSNBC's popular prison documentary season with a proven audience-grabbing entertainment of Fox's American Idol. In a press conference, Fox's Rupert Murdoch explain.
This exciting new entertainment concept will take full advantage of the recent dramatic rise in our celebrity prison population.
Murdoch announced that O.J. Simpson, Jack Abramoff, and Lil Wayne have already been signed. Lawyers for Michael Vick, Randy Cunningham, and Bernard Madoff have expressed interest, and they said they might even get an occasional appearance by Paris Hilton. He explained that the celebrity inmates will judge performances by ordinary convicts, adding,
millions will want to watch just to see if they have the guts to give an honest opinion. And then we'll follow them after the contest, documentary style, to see if anyone takes it out on them in the showers.
American Inmate is planned to debut next fall, and MSNBC's Keith Olbermann says the program hopes to feature major members of the Bush administration by the end of its fall season.
Wendy, we get all 4 seasons around here, but they don't get out of hand. Today is the first official day of winter, though, so let's check the weather with our Hoosier News weatherman, who once shook hands with a member of the American Meteorological Society, Walter Winchell. He's standing outside in the alley where it's 7 degrees. How's the weather, Walter?
Sucks, Bob.
Thanks, Walter. And now it's time for our special holiday education feature. Over to you, Red.
Thanks, Bob. Bloomington is home to Indiana University and Ivy Tech Community College, which serves more than 110,000 students a year on 23 campuses throughout Indiana. Tonight, we have a very timely talk by Professor Reverend Dr. Josiah Prayer Real, who teaches religious repair and maintenance at Ivy Tech. Professor Prayer Real.
Thank you very much, Sister Red. Now, tonight I'd like to talk to you about the Ten Commandments. The Ten Commandments are an important part of our religious repair and maintenance curriculum because they're broken more often than anything else. Recently, a professor at Hebrew University in Jerusalem suggested that Moses may have been high on hallucinogenic drugs when he brought the Ten Commandments down from Mount Sinai on two stone tablets. And the question he raised has been the subject of controversy all year. Was Moses in a drug-induced state? Is that why God had to give him tablets? We could at least be sure of three things. First, the Ten Commandments were not given by a committee. No, because if they had been, there would have been 87 commandments, hallelujah, with footnotes, plus an additional 116 proposed commandments, put forth for further study in a minority report. Can I get an amen? All right. Requiring a total of 255 stone tablets carved from Mount Sinai. Second, they were not given by a lawyer. No, they weren't, because if they were, the first commandment alone would have required 921 stone tablets carved from Mount Sinai. And third, that's what I said, And third, they were not given by Congress. Yeah, I said they weren't given by Congress. No, they were not, because if they had been, Mount Sinai would be gone, Praise the Lord.
Thank you, Professor Reverend Dr. Prayer Will. And that's all the news that fits into the script tonight. Who's your news? Sees nothing, tells all.
And now, let's bring back the B-Town Bearcats and ask the musical question. Is that you, Santa Claus?
Gifts I'm preparing for some Christmas sharing, but I pause because hanging my stocking, I can hear a knocking. Is that you, Santa Claus? Sure is dark out, not a single spark out. Pardon my clacking jaws. Who's there? Who is it? Stopping for a visit. Is that you, Santa Claus? Are you bringing a present to me? Something pleasantly pleasant for me. That is just what I've been waiting for. But would you mind slipping it under the door? The winds are a-howling, and maybe that's a-growling. My legs feel like straw. Oh, me, my, kindly would you reply? Is that you, Santa Claus? care. Stop that old teasing, I know it's you there. We don't believe in no Gobson's Day, but I can't explain why I'm shaking this way. I can't see old Santa through the keyhole. I'll get to the car. One peek I'll spy there. Is that an eye then? Is that you? Is that you? Is that you?
Town Bearcats, they are great. One of the great bands. We have so many of them here in Bloomington. And nobody knows more about that subject than WFHB's music director, Jim Mannion. Hi, Jim.
Hey, Rich. Great show so far, man.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you very much. You know, Bloomington is just not that big a town. I think there's only 70,000 in the city limits here. Now, how can a town this size have such an incredible music scene?
Well, for one thing, and it's a big thing, the Jacobs School of Music at IU is one of the best music schools in the world.
Yes, that's true.
What other town this size has 10 orchestras, 3 big bands, and an opera company that gets invited to perform at the Met?
I know. It's incredible. 1,100 shows and concerts a year, just from Indiana University.
Do we have anyone here tonight from the School of Music?
Actually, no, not really. We not officially, anyway. We put this show together in a hurry, and, well, with the holiday schedules and all, we just couldn't work it out this time. But we'd sure like to in future, it's true.
Well, obviously, we've also got a bunch of great musicians outside of the university. There's a lot of great music being made all the time in the clubs and the basements and the studios in and around Bloomington.
True, true.
From Mellencamp to Medusa, we pretty much got it all. We got indie rock, jazz, blues, world music, reggae, bluegrass, country, folk, and a whole lot more. There's a spirit of music making in this town that goes back to the days of Hoagie Carmichael.
Local boy made
before.
Good. Yeah.
It's not just music either. The WFHB Signal area has plenty of actors and painters and poets and writers and, well, you name it, doing inspired work.
Yeah, it's true. You can practically book a great show right here in Bloomington just beckoning to people from a window.
You mean they do it differently in the big city?
Well, yeah, but don't tell the cast. Well, tell you what let's do right now.
What's that?
It is cold outside. It is 6 or 7 degrees out there.
That's way cold.
And the wind is blowing. So let's bring back Art Heckman and some friends, because there's nothing warmer and nothing sweeter on a cold winter's night than hot buttered rum.
Yeah.
I've got Ann Hurley here helping us out, and Kathy Norton and Kathleen Miller are going to sing with me.
Smoke hangs still and low across the stubble fields of snow, and angry skies reach down and seize the sorry blackened bones of trees. In the dead of winter, when the silent snowbirds calm your mind, sweet maple sugar honey, hot butter. Christmas decorations line the streets and filling stations, and dime store Santas can't disguise their empty hands and empty eyes. In the dead of winter, when the tinsel angels come, you're mine. Sweet maple sugar, honey, hot buttered rum. Burning embers in the darkness bring cold comfort to the heart, and bitter memories freeze the tongue, and songs of love are left unsung. In the dead of winter, if the springtime never comes, you're mine. Sweet maple sugar, honey, hot butter rum. In the dead of winter, if the springtime never comes, you're mine. Sweet maple sugar, honey, hot butter rum.
Thank you. So let's keep the holiday spirits flowing with another shot at the B-Town Bearcats. Here's Santa Swing Me a Christmas Tune.
Yeah, but first I'd like to introduce the band, everybody.
By all means,
yes indeed. We have on trumpet Jack Sheldon. On the clarinet, Bill James. On the trombone, Dan Huey. Phil Sloper on the sousaphone. Robin Hopkins on the banjo. Don Stegsdahl on the drums. Kathleen Miller on the vocals. And yours truly, Mike Lucas, at the piano.
Yeah!
I'd like to remind you that the B-Town Bearcats will be at Bear's Place on January 8th, 5:30 to 8 o'clock, so come and hear us. Right there. Now we're going to bring Kathleen to the mic.
Dear Mr. Santa, I'm dropping you a line. Ain't got no present for that loving man of mine. Pockets are empty and I've been racking my brain. Now it's already December 24, and you're the big man from the north. No, you could help me if I could only explain. Santa, swing me a Christmas tune that I can sing to my honey. Got nothing but love to give, 'cause I just ran out of money. Oh, Santa, bring me some Christmas cheer to make his Yuletide jolly. We need to shake the blues so we could really use a little mistletoe and holly. You're the king of Christmas wishes, and after all's been said and done, when it comes to snow, holy ho ho ho, Santa, you're the only fun. So fill my stocking with hot notes. Oh, it won't be a minute too soon. I know you're on your way, but Santa, don't delay and swing me a Christmas tune. Thank you.
days upon us. I can't afford red socks or cuckoo clocks. I never got my bonus. Ever since I can remember, you made Christmas dreams come true. I'm at the end of my rope, you're my only hope. So I leave it up to you. I feel like
the B-Town Bearcats, ladies and gentlemen, a little bit more. Beautiful, thank you. And now, we come to our feature, the classic radio play by Norman Corwin, The Plot to Overthrow Christmas. It was first performed on Christmas Day, 1938, and has been revived by popular demand many times over the last 70 years. And as you are about to discover, it is written in rhyme.
The play is in verse. It's delightful. It's great. But here, in the year 2008, there's one point to make, which I hasten to state. We need to remember the play was produced many years before anyone knew Dr. Seuss.
Just so you're warned. But now, in prose form, before we can get to Christmas, we have some Thanksgiving to do. Our very special thanks to the author, Norman Corwin, the Grand Master of American Radio Theater. Mr. Corwin was born in 1910, and today he is still with us, still writing, and still on the faculty at the University of Southern California. He's even got his own website at Norman Corwin, all one word, normancorwin.com.
Norman has not only given us his kind permission to perform The Plot to Overthrow Christmas, but also helped with the script and the sound design. We know he'll hear a recording of this program, and he might even be listening right now. So will you please help us start the play by showing our appreciation. Thank you, Norman Corwin!
About the plot to overthrow Christmas? We'll gather ye now from Maine to the Isthmus of Panama and listen to the story of the utter inglory of some gory goings-on in hell. Now it happened in Hades, ladies and gentlemen, it happened down there that the fiends held a meeting. The fiends held a meeting for the purpose of defeating Christmas. With the aid of a fade on the radio, we'll take you there with a hi and a hey-de-ho to hear firsthand the brewing of the plot down in the deepest Stygian grot.
Grot is a poetical term for grotto. Whenever you hear my voce sotto, or sotto voce, whichever you prefer, it's just I taking pains to make quite sure that nobody makes a poetical allusion which might in any way create confusion. I return you now to the voice you were hearing before I did this interfering.
As I was saying, in this Stygian grot, the notables of Limbo hatched a plot. And what went on in the sulfurous hole we'll soon pick up by remote control. Of course, such a pickup's not made quickly. As a matter of fact, it's done rather trickily. You mustn't mind if it sounds erratic. That's merely intraterrestrial static. Don't be surprised if you're deafened by thunder, just as we start our journey under. You'll hear earthquakes and all of the commoner varieties of natural phenomena. And so, below, via radio, to the regions where the legions of the damned go.
How dare you interrupt me in the middle of a movement of my favorite concerto? You should look to the improvement of your manners.
Oh, sir, if you please, my apologies. I would not have intruded upon your recital if the matter were not so terribly vital.
The most important matter in the world is piddling when it comes to be compared with Nero's fiddling.
Now, what you say may be very true, but I've been sent here to summon you to a great mass meeting of the tortured souls. Down in the grot of the flaming coals.
A meeting? What for? What's the big idea? Why can't a fellow have some peace down here?
Peace, poor soul, can't be found on the premises. This is a region abounding in nemesis.
Now you're talking like a travel folder. Tell me, varlet, before I smolder, why are we meeting? Who's on the spot?
We're meeting in order to fabricate a plot. A plot against a festival that mortal men comfort in and gladden in again and again. You see, every year...
Never mind the facts. I don't want to hear how mortal man acts. The only information about which I care concerns the mass meeting and who'll be there.
His wickedness, Mephisto, will preside, naturally.
Naturally.
And several of the bourgeois will be sitting at his side. And down in front, by the sizzling sodium, will be many personalities noted for their odium. Haman, Caligula, Medusa, and Lacree.
That's all very nice, but what about me?
Oh, you will be sitting in row A, center, between Ivan the Terrible, the Tormentor, and Circe.
Oh, mercy, why, they're both deranged.
Do you wish me to see if your seat can be changed?
Yes, if you will, please. Taste comes first, even though a soul may be eternally cursed.
Righto. See you at the meeting, then.
Yes, and now back to my concerto.
This is I, the sottovoce person. It should have been explained that Nero is rehearsing for nothing in particular. He's just that way. While hell's fires burn, he likes to play. It makes him feel a little more at home. It's just an avocation he picked up in Rome.
The meeting will come to order. Please, I've called you here from over 60 seas of boiling pitch and blazing phosphorus to stop what constitutes a loss for us. We've lost prestige, and I greatly deplore that we stand in danger of losing more in the way of confidence and spirit. We're far from our goal. We're nowhere near it. And this is the reason, though we've done well in carrying forward the work of hell, we've left a very big job unfinished. After all these years, there is undiminished goodwill on Earth every late December because of Christmas. Now, please remember, as long as this continues to be, the race of man will not belong to me. I will listen now to any questions you want to ask, and then suggestions.
Mr. Chairman!
Brother Haman has the floor.
You've said we've done well in our efforts to sell evil. I say we've done better. We've carried out the letter of your law, and I say, as a veteran...
Sit down there, Haman. Enough of this volley.
Sit down yourself. You're off your trolley.
Sit down. I'm Ivan the Terrible.
You're telling us why you're unbearable.
I want decorum in this forum. These personal remarks must cease. Now, Brother Ivan, would you speak your piece?
I merely want to say, in a casual way, that Haman's a radical. Always gets fanatical. Anybody think to hear him snort that the work of the devil should just stop short? Anybody think to hear this fool that we all should go to Sunday school?
Mr. Chairman, Brother Ivan was a demagogue with a brain like a fly and the manners of a hog.
Has it come to this? Are we going to let a little holiday like Christmas get the better of us all down here below?
No!
Very well then, sirs, very well. Let's go. Let's lay down our plans now to overthrow this Christmas business and all that guff of holly and mistletoe and stuff.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Miss Salome, do you wish to have a say?
I do. A dame like me
knows how to get ahead.
Oh, we all know about that platter. This is a totally different matter.
Get lost. You're as mad as a Mad Hatter.
At least I haven't gotten fatter. That's more than can be said for you.
Well, you pinhead, you will rue.
You balmy Miss Salami.
You are swill and swiller.
You dare insult the great Attila?
From whom descended the gorilla?
Cut the cackle. I warn you not to raise my hackle. You were saying, Salome?
If we're looking for a way to set humans up for a fall, let's give them high cholesterol by sending to their habitats lots of saturated fats. And you know what this begets? Quantities of cigarettes.
Mr. Chairman!
Brother Caligula may take the floor.
Mr. Chairman, I abhor, as a former emperor, anything which curbs our rule. Let us give some presents, too. Candy sticks and things to chew. Fruits and nuts and little cakes. Poisonous as rattlesnakes.
Bravo!
Let our subtlest worker be bichloride of mercury.
Brilliant!
Let us wrap in tinsel bright little gifts of dynamite.
Very good.
Work things so that men will fear when 12:25 draws near.
Good.
Soon at this rate, if you please, men will hang from Christmas trees.
My dear Caligula, permit the chair to say we think you've got something there. And now with this fine start, let's hear some more, Brother Nero. Do you want the floor?
With all due respect to Caligula's views, I think there's a better method we can use. I've heard just lately men are giving the razz to classical music by making it jazz. They're rocking Bach, and what is keener, they're cutting loose with Palestrina. As a connoisseur of music, of course, I love the works of Rimsky-Korsakov. But today I note with a bitter shrug, they've made Scheherazade a jitterbug.
Jitterbug? That's been passé for 50 years, if it's a day.
Much as we admire your clever rhyme, will you get to the point? We're wasting time.
I was just about to say, when interrupted, that Christmas can easily be corrupted. If you punk rock all the Christmas carols, why think of the evil, just barrels and barrels of sacrilege every time you play a pious song in a profane way. Why, once you entice them to punk Noel, then victory belongs to us fiends. Well? Yeah!
Mr. Chairman!
Mr. Legree.
I'd like to say that it seems to me that y'all is barking up a coonless tree. I think Mr. Nero's made a wrong guess. And the way to go about it is to get in Congress, bribe a bunch of senators who know their oats, and just make a purchase of a block of votes. And then they can legislate a situation where they rules old Christmas right out of the nation. They can all get together and pass a law where there ain't gonna be no Christmas no more.
I think Legree's suggestion is a mute.
It's very cute.
And quite astute.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Miss Borgia.
I say that we should all give pause to think about this Santa Claus. He's the man behind the scenes, the symbol of what this Christmas means. If we could rub him out, my friend, our troubles would be at an end. Just think how it would tickle us to liquidate St. Nicholas. A girl like me could fascinate the guy and then assassinate.
Do you think that you could do it, pretty one? Are you sure you wouldn't be by pity one?
Sometimes you are an awful tease, my master Mephistopheles. Ain't I murdered several dozens, poisoned uncles and some cousins? Don't my work right here in Hades make me first among the ladies? Men of virtue all have cussed me. I am sure that you can trust me.
On that, now we haven't a particle of doubt, Miss Borgia. I'm sure we all have nothing but kind feelings toward you. But many times a woman spy, alas, adores her victim. Dames make poor ambassadors.
Do you imply that such defects are found inherent in my sex?
I do.
Well, listen here, old Ironsides. You're heading for some cyanides. You have crossed a Borgia, and you know what consequences will follow.
Borgia!
Come, disciples, this is very bad. There's nothing to be gained by getting mad. Suppose we put the matter to a vote. All those in favor of the motion made by Fiend Caligula will signify by rising to their feet and saying aye.
Aye!
One vote in favor, Caligula's. And the opposed?
Opposed!
The motion is defeated. Let's talk about Nero's plan to rock the hymns in pious music. All those for will, please respond by raising a paw.
Four.
And those against?
Against!
Very well. The scheme of Lady Salome?
Nay!
Now the project of Legris. Who is there here who totally agrees?
I do.
Legris votes for himself. And those opposed?
Opposed!
Now, all those who favor Borgia's cause, it being to eliminate Santa Claus.
Aye, aye, aye!
And those opposed? It seems the women have a way with them. At least they've carried the day with them.
You flatterer.
The motion's carried. And now we'll decide which one of us will take Nick for a ride. We'll all draw lots and thus settle the moot point of who we've sent to execute.
This is your old friend, Sotto Voce, visiting down where it's eternal, Noche. Noche is no Spanish for night, you know. Merely a reference just to show that English isn't all I have to go by. Ah, well, I guess I've missed my calling. I should have been a lobbyist. You see, I'm just stalling to give them time to finish the voting. Let's see, the weather. Now I'm quoting the Daily Hellion. Continued heat, both overhead and under feet. Free and moderate gases blowing up to gale force and then going north by westerly. Light showers of brimstone during the evening hours. That's what it says here. I'm not fibbing. How am I doing with my ad-libbing? This is a thing Dan Rather'd have fun with. Say, the drawing should soon be done with. We expect the results any moment now, as soon as...
The lots have been drawn, and I'm glad to say the honor has fallen Nero's way.
Yeah, Nero, 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 Nero.
Now, Nero, you are charged with a great task. It is the evilest deed that we could ask a fiend to do. We'll be proud of you.
Now, just a moment. How do I get there? What do I wear? Is it dry or wet there? Is it fact or fancy or just word of mouth that he lives at the pole? Is it north or south? What shall I use when it comes to the showdown? A gun or a dagger? Now give me the lowdown.
Ah, Nero. You needn't be so tragic. You'll get to Earth by the blackest magic. To create an elevator is simple for an expert spell creator. With a lot of pyrotechnic dazzle, we'll get you off on a hill in, we'll let you off on a hill in Basel, Switzerland. From there, you will make your way to the Arctic Circle, then break your way through ice with a blowtorch. After a while, you're bound to reach Santa's domicile, and once you get there, ah, my dear Nero, all of our work will have gone for zero if you don't succeed in your assignment.
I know. If at first we don't succeed, we can try and try again. But there is no need, because nothing will come of it. Meaning no offense. Do you mind if I take my departure hence?
That, my friends, was a big brass gong. It's used in this story right along to indicate we're about to travel to points where the story will further unravel. And now if Ambassador Nero elects, we'll have another spot of sound effects.
Ow. Tell me, stranger, is this Basel, Switzerland, or is it already Donner and Blitzerland?
Donner and Blitzerland is 5,000 miles away.
Thank you, mister, and good day. Tell me, stranger, I've been walking inland for weeks. Where am I now?
In Finland.
Stranger, without sparing me, is this here the Bering Sea?
Oh, goodness, no, it's Baffin Bay.
And does that call for laughing, eh?
Sir, I'm from the news. As a traveler, have you views? Have you any prattle that the West Spitsbergen Tatterblatt can garble in a routine way? Like, for instance, let us say, are you neutral? Do you favor any one delicious flavor? Is the blanket out of kilter? Are you partial to gefilter? Is your toga made of leather? Care to comment on the weather? Is it all right if I quote you? By what name may I denote you?
Call me Nero.
Ah, you paint so keen, so delicate, so quaint.
My name is Nero, idiot, not Miro.
What? The former emperor of Rome? Above the latitude of Nome, you, the old-time Paganini. Was it you said Vidi Vini? No, of course not. That was Julie, Caesar. Was it you who coolly played while something burned? What was it?
That does it. Tell me, Madam Flapping Yap, which way to the polar cap?
That away. Cross the glacier, then turn right.
Thanks for nothing, and good night. Tell me, stranger, because I've lost stock, where am I now?
In Vladivostok.
Listen, stranger, after all these centuries of blistering heat, now I have to suffer from freezing feet. I'm wincing with pain from this pesky toe.
No speak English. Eskimo. Oh.
I declare by my frenetic soul, I must be over the magnetic pole. My watch has stopped. Can that be right? I wonder. A light, a light. In a moment now you'll hear me knock on Santa's door and he'll unlock it nevermore to lock again.
Coming!
So is doom.
How do you do, sir?
Very well indeed, and you, sir?
Splendidly. Won't you come in? Take your coat off. I see your chin is frozen. Also your hands and knees. Sit down while I get you some antifreeze.
Don't bother, sir. I will not be long. I'm about to perpetrate a fearful wrong. In short, I'm about to do away with you.
Oh, take it easy. Do not play with that gun. I know all about you.
Really?
Haven't I had my agents scout you for weeks? You've come all this way to abolish Christmas. Now let me say...
Listen, Santy, I'm no callow stripling. I've read Ernest Hemingway and Kipling, and also The Shooting of Dan McGrew, and plenty of detective stories, too. And just to show you what a broad guy I am, I've also read the Rubaiyat of Omar Khayyam. Do you think that a fellow with his reading so graded could have learned so little as to be dissuaded from the main objective? Why, don't make me giggle.
I'd feel a lot better if you wouldn't wiggle that gun so. Much as I'm impressed with your education, I honestly believe that a figure of your station should have given more thought to the ways of man and less devotion to the cult of Pan.
By others, no doubt, your wisdom may be prized, but I didn't come here to be criticized. In fact, I came here to dispatch a duty, so don't hand me all this tutti-frutti. If you've any last words you want to say, then spill 'em. I haven't got all day.
Now, what's the rush? Unless I've counted wrong, the polar day is always 6 months long.
Well, after I've disposed of you, I've got to hurry. Right back to hell, or they'll begin to worry.
Not about you, but about your career in homicide. Do you think that the mere loss of you would make them hysterical? Their only interest is numerical.
Think so?
Mephisto wants to rule just as much of humanity as possible for reasons of personal vanity.
By the Styx, you're right! To think that he dare... Are there any ladies here? Would you permit me to swear?
My answer to that is an emphatic no. There are several lady dolls in the toy room below.
Oh, Claudius! Oh, Cassius! Oh, Naphthalene! What a fool I've been! What a fool I've been! But wait, I think I see what you're after. You're as clever as a big-time Roman grafter. You remind me now of my royalty just to get me in a mood for disloyalty. Do you think I could be that meanly deceptive to Satan? Why, Santa, I'm keenly perceptive. I can see right through all your clever ruses. Nero can be plenty foxy when he chooses. I'll have you know that I'm partly a dreamer, partly a wit, and partly a schemer. I'm part philosophical and also part mystic.
I suppose you fancy that you're highly artistic.
Fancy? Why, I have such a sense of beauty.
Don't hand me a helping of tutti frutti. Any creature who really had beauty in his soul would appreciate Christmas. He would know that the whole idea of the holiday is one of such power that all the fiends below might gnash their fangs and glower, yet never in a million years could do it harm, because it has a glory, a greatness, a charm you would know nothing about.
Is that so?
The spirit that it venerates, the good cheer that it generates, are things far, far beyond you. For all your wealth, no man on earth could sell ye these.
Am I so cursed as that? Will you tell me, please, what beauties there may be that I have never seen?
Have you ever seen a Christmas tree? Tall and green, smelling of woodlands, covered with a sheen of silveriness, its branches bending low with the fruits of human kindness instead of snow?
No.
Have you ever closely witnessed what takes place any Christmas morning on a young child's face, or perceived any beauties purer than those distilled in the hearts of little girls and boys? Have you ever watched a fire in a fireplace on a Christmas Eve, or listened to a grace at a table heavy with fruits and cakes and all the wonders that a kitchen makes, fowls and pastries, wines and meats, and nuts and raisins and candied sweets? Have you ever seen mistletoe hanging from a ceiling in frosty air, heard a far bell pealing? Have you ever come back from a sleigh ride tingling and your feet keeping time with the sleigh bells jingling? Have you ever seen the beauty of a sprig of holly, or felt for a moment how it feels to be jolly?
Golly.
Have you ever known how exceedingly pleasant it is to unwrap a Christmas present? Did you ever know how much cheer it lends to be wished a Merry Christmas by all your friends? Have you ever experienced the fun of giving? Do you know at all the joys of living?
I guess I don't. For all of me, I never knew such things could be. Just think how long in ignorance I've slept.
It must have been the company you kept.
I was a wicked tyrant once, you know.
Ah, yes. But that was centuries ago. You really had no way of knowing.
Perhaps. I guess that I'll be going. I really should be getting on my way.
But do you have to? Don't you want to stay?
You see, I'm just a bit...
embarrassed.
Why, yes, sir.
Now, don't look so harassed. I know just why you came and who it was that sent you. But that's all done with. I take it you repent you of all your past mistakes?
With many pains and aches of conscience.
Then you are welcome here. Please take your hat off, your coat, your muffler also. Take your spat off. What happened to the other one? No matter. You're pretty thin. You'll presently be fatter. I serve good food here. I'll get you a platter of steak and mushrooms, medium or rare. I'll bet that you're as hungry as a bear. Now just sit down. That's it. Right over here. And tell me, will you have some wine or beer? I never touch the stuff myself, but manage to keep on hand a little rye for purposes medicinal. And man, your chin should be unfrozen. What a state it's in!
A while ago you asked me if I understood good cheer. I do so now, St. Nicholas. I see it standing here. I want to ask you something, sir. Now, please don't give a yelp. Is there any sort of work to do where I can be of help?
Indeed! indeed there is. Indeed there is. And I am glad you asked me. I have so many toys to make this year, the job's got past me. But first, you sit and eat this bowl. I've got a little trifle I'd like for you to see. So will you sit right here and stifle your curiosity? I'll get it for you right away. It's down the hall a piece.
Well, well, who'd ever think it? Will wonders never cease? At last, after all these centuries, I'm so happy I could buzz. It shows you what a lot a little Christmas spirit does. As emperor, I envied oft the cheerfulness of peasants, and now...
Well, here it is, Nero, my boy. By way of Christmas presents, I offer you this little gift.
But Santa, for what reason?
A very good one, sir, to wit, compliments of the season. Well, go ahead and open it. Why stand there so reflecting?
I'm just collecting thoughts, Saint Nick. My thoughts I'm just collecting. Just think how far a tiny bit of fellowship will carry us. Oh, well. I say, what's this? What's this? It is a Stradivarius. Why, thank you. Thanks a million times. I don't know what to say to you. I'll tell you what I'll do, St. Nick. I'll start right in and play for you. I'll play all night and day for you.
Fine. Now, here's some music. I'm sure you'll play it well. It's a little piece entitled Noel, Noel.
Sotto voce, friend, I've just come back to tell you that the story's at an end.
Fish, with live sound effects by Tony Brewer. Malin Fiddler played Nero's violin. And we heard the voices of Mike Kelsey as Sotto Voce, Daryl Stone as the Messenger, Joel Pearson as Nero, Kirby Thompson as Mephisto, Joe Estival as Attila and Traveler Number One, Will Murphy as Ivan the Terrible, Suzette Weekly as Salome and Traveler Number Four, Mark Richardson as Caligula, Dana Dyer Pearson as Lucretia Borgia, Renee Reed as The Reporter, Cindy Lewandowski as Traveler Number Three, Richard Fish as Simon Legree and Santa Claus, and I'm Jeff Stone, Heyman, and your narrator.
Thank you very much. Well, that's our holiday show for 2008, folks. No matter what holidays you're celebrating, all of us wish you and yours all the best and a very happy, safe, and prosperous new year. Good night.
One, two, three, four, one.
WFHB's holiday special for 2008 was created by a whole lot of wonderful volunteers. You've been listening to the voices of the mighty Firehouse Heart Singers, Joel Pearson, Dana Dyer Pearson, Daryl Stone, Jeff Stone, Joe Estival, Kirby Thompson, Joy Shane Lauder, Mark Richardson, Renee Reed, Suzette Weekly, Will Murphy, Susie Worsham, and our violinist, Malin Fiddler. Sound effects by award-winning Foley Meister, Tony Brewer, and music from Jim Krause and Ann Hurley. Art Heckman and his friends, Dan G-Man Silva, Joe and Kathy Norton, the Fatted Calf String Band, and our fearless musical director, Mike Lucas, and the B-Town Bearcats. Radio engineering by the indefatigable Jeffrey Morris, and Matt Nations with house sound by Shane Young. Down at the station, John O.B. Byers has been stoking our steam-fired mixing board, and Carolyn Vanderweel, Cindy Lewandowski, and Leah Tannen have volunteered above and beyond the call. This show could not have happened without the support of WFHB's outstanding board of directors and the inexhaustible community radio staff, General Manager Will Murphy, Music Director Jim Mannion, News Director Chad Carruthers, and Chief Engineer Jeffrey Morris. The script was written by Jeffrey Frisch, with help from Jeff Stone, Mike Kelsey, except, of course, the plot to overthrow Christmas by Norman Corwin, and Rudolph the Red-Nosed Housecat by Bill Reed. Our hats are off big time to the Bloomington Area Arts Council, especially Waldron Arts Center Manager Mark Machado, who helped us turn the place into a radio inside and out. The program is directed by Richard Fish and produced for WFHB Community Radio by Richard and Mike Kelsey. Special thanks in advance to the Firesign Theater at firesigntheater.com for deciding not to sue us over the jokes we stole. I'm your announcer, Jeff Stone, wishing you a wonderful holiday season and lots of fun all year long.
Hey, before we finish, I've got a New Year's haiku.
Well, hurry up.
My resolution, no more resolutions I can't keep like this one.
Thank you for being with us tonight. Good night.